Hi, I'm Elizabeth Bowman, and this is the Opera Glasses podcast. Today, I have Greek-Canadian soprano Sula Parasidis as my guest. She is a multifaceted artist, an entrepreneur, a producer, and the CEO of Living Opera. The catalyst for starting Living Opera was to talk about mental health struggles, and in particular, stage fright and overcoming it. They have grown into so much more. You can check them out at livingopera.org. Anyway, let's start the conversation with Sula. Sula, welcome to the Opera Glasses podcast. Thanks so much for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's an honor.
So I think that many Canadians in our industry might not even know that you are Canadian. So I want to talk a bit about your background.
I put a Canadian flag in my Instagram bio. It's like right there for everyone to see. No, I'm from Canada. I mean, you know, what's really funny is I was born in Vancouver. I went to school in Vancouver. My mom's from Alberta. I mean, her mom is actually from Ireland, but I mean, she grew up in Canada. My dad is Greek, but like, that's where I grew up. But over the years, so I have an American husband. I've spent a lot of time abroad. And my accent is all mixed up. I was filming last week and I was hearing the playback and I was like, who's that? What happened to your voice? It's pretty embarrassing. So what I think is really funny is when people find out I'm Canadian, then they say, ah, yes, I hear a bit of an accent. And I'm like, no, you don't. Right now, currently, I divide my time between Nashville, Tennessee and Vienna, Austria, and then wherever there are gigs. And so it's all confused. But I grew up in the most beautiful, in my opinion, the most beautiful city in the world, Vancouver, which spoiled me for life because anywhere you go after that is sort of like, oh, no, those are nice mountains. Oh, yeah. Look at that lake, Zurich. I'm just being honest.
I hear you. I mean, I've been to Vancouver. It's so amazing. The access to outdoor activities is, like, you can't get that kind of metropolis with outdoor combination.
It's unbelievable.
I'm excited. In June, I'm going to Banff. It's like the greatest place on earth,
though. Banff, you're stunning. Canada, just generally, there's like a lot of beautiful places in Canada. It's hard to beat.
I got to know more about Living Opera. I want to know how it started, what it is. Tell me what happened.
You know, I've been a singer. That's all I've ever done. I'm married to a singer. So it's like a very singer focused lifestyle that we've been leading for over 10 years. But my husband started to go through some pretty intense performance anxiety before it was cool to talk about mental health. Now it's like, yeah, talk about mental health. But like then it was like, oh my gosh, like we have to hide the fact that he's going through this. This is horrible. Like, what do we do? It just sort of was a factor of like him kind of shooting up overnight. He started singing a lot of productions with Cecilia Bartoli, who's amazing. But, you know, that really put the spotlight on him in a way that had never happened before. And I was sort of there trying to support him as his partner. But I was like, oh my gosh, you know, his brain is getting broken. Like, I don't know what to do. And we've spoken about this a lot on our YouTube channel and social media and other things that we've done. This was really like a taboo thing. And so we were suffering for a couple of years just by ourselves, feeling very alone. And it got to the point where I just said, look, you know, I know that we've dedicated everything to this and we've left our homes, our beautiful homes, my beautiful home in Canada. You're like, okay, home in North Carolina, whatever. And we're going to have to make a change or I'm sorry, but like, I feel like we need to leave this business because it's not like I can just stay in it and then you suffer over here and it doesn't affect me either. Like when we're a unit. So that was the beginning of us thinking about how can we talk about this in a proactive and positive way. We ended up giving him therapy. And again, we've really spoken about this a lot, but that was like the seed. That was like, okay, we've gone through this experience. We've come over the other side. Now what? Because people were noticing, they noticed when he was like really going through it and they noticed that he'd gotten better and they wanted to know like, whoa, what happened? So we just decided at the end of 2018 that we would start leveraging social media in a positive way. So it was like, first week of January, 2019, we were so formal. We were so nervous. Like you should have seen our notes. We were so funny. We these notes. And it's like, if you scroll enough in my Instagram channel or our YouTube channel, you can see us like very like, we are going to speak on the topic of rejection. And it was like, it had progressively got more relaxed, but we just felt like nobody was going to talk about it. So we should. And at least there's two of us. So, you know, it's not just one person over here going like, I went through this. It's like, no, we want to create a way for the arts community to have these conversations and then point to a solution, like not just to say, oh man, you know, I really got stressed out being a singer and business is horrible and complaints. Like, no. We wanted to talk about, like, this is what you can do to avoid falling in this hole that we fell into. These are practical ways that you can make your life better, both on stage, but also off stage, because that's where you spend most of your time. And the interesting thing is we started getting all these like DMs from our peers saying like, oh, you guys, this is so great that you're doing this. You know, I went through this, I went through that. And I thought it was so funny because we were getting messages from people who'd even have bigger careers than us. I'm like, you should platform talk about it. Like, you know, we're over here. We're just these little small fish over here. Like, oh my goodness, you know, say something. But I guess maybe, I don't know, in the grand scheme of things, maybe that's like what we're supposed to do. So anyway, that's how it started.
Do you have the top three things that you would recommend to get over performance anxiety? Do you remember the process?
You know, I don't remember in that first talk what we said, but I think, you know, when we are talking to somebody about if they're experiencing anxiety of any kind, I feel like that is usually rooted in a fear of rejection of some kind. So thinking like, they're not going to accept me, they're judging me. And usually I will start asking questions and say, well, do you judge? Do you reject people? Do you project this kind of behavior into the world? Because if you can sort of like curb that on your own side, you'll stop looking for it in other people. Whether they might do it, but as long as you're not living that way, it's like, I feel like you're inviting that less into your life. So that's one thing. And then the other thing is, of course, honing your skills, which I know we're all trying to do, but I feel like a lot of stress comes from when you just know, I've never really gotten that high note in rehearsal, but now I'm supposed to sing in public. Like, how the heck am I going to do that? What? So, you know, I guess it's like a soul thing, a technique thing. And then also knowing like, I mean, I realize this is what we dedicated our lives to, but it's just opera. Like, you're valuable outside of, you know, one day we're all going to, you know, exit stage left and that's that. And you have so much intrinsic value on that stage. And when you go out that stage left door and you close the door forever and you go into your other part of your life, like, oh my goodness, you know, we're all so multifaceted. So that's what comes to me today for this particular audience that maybe somebody needed to hear.
Ultimately, as opera singers or any kind of singer, you're there to communicate something. And if you have no distractions in how you're communicating that, which you're not feeling judged, you're not, you know, looking around you, wondering what everyone is thinking constantly, you'll be more successful in getting that message across. So
totally. You know what else, Elizabeth? It's like this. They are judging you and it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Like, it's happening. People decide within the first 30 seconds of when you walk out there, whatever they think, but you're there to do a job. And ultimately, I feel like you can, as you said, communicate. You can communicate that you are there in some form of service, and whatever their reaction is, that's theirs. But you've done your thing and you've done your job. So I feel like that can really bring rest when people really grasp that.
I've said this on the podcast before, but my parents would always tell me, control the variables you can control. And the rest, I mean, it is what it is. So you put in the work, you hone the skills, and you work on your emotional health and mental state. And that's really all you can do.
And also, haters gonna hate. It's just like, eventually you get to a level of visibility and you're gonna have haters because you're visible. That's okay too. It's like, okay, I don't know what your problem is, but just go over there. Like, you know, I don't know how you have time for it. If you're really inside your purpose, I don't know how you have time to look at me or anybody else and be like, well, I'm just going to hate on that person today. It's like, what a waste of your time, you know? Yeah. And I feel like there's so much over-criticism in opera that we really detract from what we're trying to do, which is create beautiful art and uplift people's days.
So what's your favorite way to communicate via this Living Opera brand? Like, what's your favorite?
Oh, you know, it's so funny because there's so many things to build when you're, first of all, I have to say this. I did not realize I was building a brand. And I started to have some of my like younger followers say, oh my gosh, we're so excited about your brand and your launch. Like, what are they talking about? Like, I create content for fun on the road because I find it very calming. Like, I love to communicate with people in all these various ways. So, you know, blog posts, Instagram, whatever, and of course on stage. But I realized, like, trying to reach all the different people we need to reach, because it's not just emerging artists and it's not just administrators and it's not just our peers and it's also people who might finance projects and now it's like policymakers. And so I have different personae on different platforms. So I've got my LinkedIn situation going. And then I have my Instagram, which is really my favorite because I love to, I don't, anybody who's not following me, you don't have to, but that's where I really, I feel like I get to just really be myself because I always wanted to sing comedic roles, but I always end up singing like these tragic people and just sad stuff. And I, in my heart of hearts, you know, I wanted to be like Zerbinetta or whatever. So, or Rosina, or I don't know. So I get to have my little outlet there on my Instagram channel. And basically for me though, whatever is creative, whether it's singing or writing, or, I mean, even this is going to sound silly, but like even putting together stuff like grants, I mean, it's just like, how do we solve that problem? So it's even when I'm, you know, studying an art, it's like, how do I solve the problem of communicating this emotion through sound, through gesture, through the text? I mean, it's all just a big puzzle. I just love all of it. I mean, it's just marvelous to hear whatever facet, whatever I'm trying to do, you know, even if it's a drier LinkedIn post, sometimes I get messages saying, oh, that really helped me, or that's a good insight. And that's the point. Like that's for me, that's always like a big, like win, you know, a big thumbs up emoji. Like, yes, I did it today. And I just love that.
Not to change the subject too much, but you are coming to Canada to sing. Can you tell us a bit about the event? It's coming up very soon.
Yes. So this is a cancer fundraiser, and this sort of came about in an unusual way. So last year was the 100-year anniversary of the Maria Callas. Well, Maria Callas. See, we're nervous. And I sang one of her iconic roles, Iphigenie en Tauride. And through that, I actually met the former Canadian ambassador to Greece. And we became acquaintances. And he said, you know, why haven't you really worked in Canada? And I was like, no, you know, it's just, I've always wanted to sing at home. I mean, that was my debut in Greece. And I'm also half Greek. And I said, you know, it's just every market, you have to build up every market separately, which is another topic. But I said, you know, let's think about how I can come there and do something. And of course, there's all the wonderful opera companies and recitals and all of that. But when he learned more about my story, he said, oh, you're a cancer survivor. Well, how would you feel about coming to Canada to help us raise money? So McGill University has a marvelous project that is basically a gala fashion show. I'm going to get to walk in a couture gown, which is like, oh, boo-hoo. And I'm going to sing and raise money for endometrial cancer. And this is my first time singing professionally in Canada. And I'm really looking forward to it. It's in Montreal. No, it's really meaningful and interesting for me because it's kind of like a full circle thing. This is a podcast for people who want to learn about being an opera singer in one sense. So I feel like it's fine to say this here. I didn't say this in my conversation with him as a, you know, a formal conversation, but you know, when I finished my degree at UBC, the week after I got that degree, that's when I was diagnosed with cancer. And frankly, if I am honest, I feel like I carried that baggage around for a very long time. And I did not talk about it publicly for a very long time because it was just sort of like, it's weird, but I associated home with that traumatic experience. And that was actually a more honest answer. I just felt like, oh yeah, I don't know. I haven't developed that market. Oh. But it was really hard for me to sort of, every time I'd go back, I would feel that thing tugging on my heart and it was just hard. So for me, it's somewhat poetic to go there. I mean, it's funny because there were times where, you know, an opportunity came up to go and sing more formally in an opera company or whatever. And then I was busy doing something else or it just didn't work or the time or whatever it was. So I think for me, it's kind of full circle and poetic that I'm coming to do this. And I feel fully healed of that experience now. Like I feel fine, but it took a long time because it was, wow. For me, I didn't have endometrial cancer. I had thyroid cancer. So it was in my throat. I lost my voice. Wow. I wasn't able to sing. My body changed. I had to change repertoire like overnight. So, you know, that's when you're a singer, that's a ton of baggage.
I can't imagine. How many years have you been in remission?
Oh no, I'm fine. Like a long time. Like, no, because I mean, when they got it out completely. So I'm on medication for the rest of my life, but I'm so fortunate. Like, I mean, you guys, for real, like that, I'm so grateful because it could have been so much worse. It was just more, at that point, it was less about even my overall health and more about like, I had been studying for so many years for this one thing. And with one surgery, it's like, everything was flipped on its head. I had to completely pivot in my whole life. And I did not have the life skills for that. I mean, I think that's partly why I analyzed that so much. And I didn't realize that would be the foundation for what we do in living opera, because living opera is partly education for emerging artists. And so that was actually, you know, as sucky as it was, that was the foundation of the training for what we do now. I didn't realize I was going to be, you know, gathering it up in real time, which is like, when you're going through it, you're like, this is terrible. But then when you get to pour it out for other people, you're like, wow, like that really had purpose in my life. It wasn't just suffering for no reason. So I'm very grateful for that.
Yeah, I can only imagine when you go through something so challenging. I mean, that there's the saying, which doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Yeah. It really is true. And bringing that fuel to your performances and to living opera, I mean, that's a gift to everyone.
Yeah, no, it is. It is. And I mean, how can you, I mean, I'm not saying every person has to go through that. I mean, good grief. I pray that nobody does. I know for me that it shaped so many things that I've done. And it is a well that I can draw in a desperate time in a performance, you know, when a character is really going through something, because I've been on the edge of something like that myself, I can draw from a different place that's not just imagination. And I think that's been valuable for me. But, you know, there's other times, other operas, it's like, you know, I just don't really want to ever have to, you know, in singing Salome, have to get near a real severed head. Like, that's fine. We're just going to use our imagination for that one. That's all good. It's like,
yeah,
thanks.
That's fine. Good to not relate to that.
No, forget. We're
good at that. The former Canadian ambassador to Greece, are you talking about Robert Peck?
Yeah.
I met him. Yeah. I used to help administrate a chamber music festival in Greece.
Cool.
For a few summers, and it's still going, the Saronic Chamber Music Festival. Really, really fantastic players. I think they're still going. My husband played, my husband has been mentioned on this podcast too much. Ben Bowman, he's concertmaster of the Metropolitan Opera. So he's played there, and then a bunch of players who play in the London Symphony Orchestra, and you know, a lot of Londoners in it.
Cool. I'm in London right now. So there you go. Another full circle thing. That's so cool. I had no idea you had that connection to Greece. That's amazing.
Yeah. I haven't been back in a long time, but I would like to go back. Anyone listening to the podcast?
Yeah. Set up. We'll figure it out. We'll use connections, Greek connections. We will.
That festival was based in Galata, mainland, and then they would go out to the different islands, Poros and Hydra.
That's amazing. You know, it's funny, like, because when I sang in Greece last year, that was the first time, I just felt such a conviction. And it's the same way I feel about Canada. And I was like, it's time for me to spend more time at home, you know, but home is multifaceted for me because it is Greece and it is Canada. And frankly, my mom is Irish. I did a debut in Ireland, and that also felt meaningful. I was quite funny. Actually, they ran like a piece about me, and they said, with a name like Sula, we knew she must be Irish. It's horrible Irish accent. Sorry, guys. But I had to laugh. I was like, y'all, you're so funny. But I really, through Living Opera, you know, we have such a big community, and we have people in Greece, and we have a lot of people in Canada and the United States. And I'm really actively thinking about how can we create more projects that aren't just, you know, fun for us to do, but really beneficial and give people a leg up. And this is something that I'm actively thinking about, you know, having been in those places and just wanting to make a difference. You know, it is different. I mean, things have improved a lot since I did my degree and came up in Canada. But there's just so much talent. I spend most of my time, if I'm not, you know, doing regular life stuff or music, I'm over here going like, how can we mobilize all these talented people? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I let that jog in my brain for like 8 hours a day, and then I go to sleep. And I'm still trying to come up with the solutions. But right now I'm trying to build a project where I can really just tour around. You know, when I was younger, my dream, you know, speaking of like Met Orchestra, I'm like, oh my God, like the Met, all, you know, all the regular places. And of course I still dream about that, but I have new dreams and seriously, that going around even to smaller places and connecting with the people who have perhaps been helped by the content or need the content and they don't know who I am. I don't even care about that. It's just like going and actually actively being with people, even if it's just like 50 people or 100 people, that's really getting me going these days. So I'm trying to put together an idea and see like, how can I do this? Mm-hmm. And how can I go and connect and help artists? This might sound funny, but I feel like artists are only shown one pathway to be impactful through their art. And I would love to show multiple pathways. Like, what if somebody is meant to stay in Winnipeg and just be a leader there and create something incredible there. But they're told, well, if you haven't gone to sing at the Met by this age, whatever, I mean, you're not successful. It's like, I want to change that perception.
Everyone has their own path. And of course, you can be successful in your hometown and not go away. But yes, there has been, I guess, for our generation of administrators and singers and that kind of thing, that narrative has really been quite strong. And I'm feeling like it is changing, like along with.
I do too. Yeah, yeah, I do too. I just want to see, like, I remember my teacher in Canada, if I'm not mistaken, I mean, wasn't there like, didn't the COC go on tour? Wasn't that a thing? Like, they go all around the country? Is that a thing again? So I'm so out of touch. Like,
I don't know if they went all around the country, but they definitely went to Ottawa, where I grew up.
I feel like he told me stories that, like, as a young singer, that he was going and singing like Rigoletto and doing all this stuff. And I was like, man, that's so cool that he got to go all around Canada and do that. You know, that's how you cut your teeth, right? I mean, I was Fest for 3 years in Germany. So that's where I cut my teeth. By the time I was doing freelance stuff, you know, that's, I already wanted to feel comfortable on stage. But I really just dream of, you know, systems and strategies where people can go out and really fail, like really do a bad performance. Right. I think we need that. I'm serious. Like, I did some stuff when I was at Oprah Leipzig. Like, I always tried to give it my all. But sometimes I was like, man, was that okay? Like, but it was safe. It was safe for me to, like, you know, botch a high note. And, you know, I didn't have to get worried that I'm going to get written up bad in the press or whatever, you know. And I feel like, again, it's another bit of a tangent, but I want us to study, how did people learn? How were people trained in the past? How did this work? I would love to just sit with my teacher for the next 6 months and just be like in his atelier, like going, and now what do I do? And I just love the process. And I feel like everything's so rushed.
Circling back to, because I was just thinking about the time that I had in Greece, all these amazing musicians gathering together in a beautiful place. But a lot of the communities they went to, they didn't have access to classical music, didn't even know who Schubert was. It was just not known. And they would play these concerts for very low ticket price for the communities. And everyone was having a good time. There was no worries. I mean, maybe there were worries, but I wasn't privy to them.
So those 2 hours, it was like we had a worry-free dome. But then, Yeah. I mean, the thing is, okay, I love to just talk to strangers. I don't know if you can tell. I was sitting on the subway here coming into London 2 days ago. Yeah, it was 2 days ago. I'm like, the days are just blurring together. I was trying to get to this last performance at ENO that my husband was doing. And I was sitting next to some folks from South Africa. They, you know, I don't know, I guess it was just taking a long time. They're like, so what do you do? And I said, oh, you know, I'm an artist. Like, no, but like, you know, oh yeah, what do? Do you do paintings? Like, oh, okay, I'm an opera singer. Like, I always know the minute I say that, it's all going to be like, so eventually I got the boat turned, you know, and said, what do you do? Tell me about your life. You know, I want to know. And so she's a chemist. And anyway, they have this interesting stuff that they do, but they really wanted to know more about the life of opera and opera singers. And so, well, you know, you could just go to a show. I'm like, oh, well, you know, it's like really expensive. And I was just like, man, we need new PR. Like, what's going on here? It is so much more expensive to go to so many different other activities than it is to go to the opera at this point. Like, we have done everything we can to make this accessible. But now I think it's just like a narrative thing. So I said, I just pulled something out of the air. I said, well, don't you think tickets to Taylor Swift are much more expensive? And when they thought about it, they were like, huh, never thought about it that way. And I said, do you feel like maybe you just sort of like accepted that idea? Because this is what I honestly said. I said, look, think about it. We're asking you to come sit still in a theater, not make noise, listen to something for, like, let's say 3 hours in a language that you probably don't speak. That's probably uncomfortable. Because then what if you don't like it? Or what if you don't like the sounds? Or what if you don't understand and then it makes you feel dumb? You know, I mean, seriously. And I said, so first of all, we're there to make you feel something, whatever that feeling is. And just go read the plot ahead of time. Just, you know, just read the plot and find a ticket for $50 or 20, I don't know, $20, wherever you are, you know, and just try it once. And if you don't like it, you don't ever have to go again. But I said, you know, we met here and we're having this conversation. So what if you just try it once? And I feel like, you know, if all of us would just try to have that conversation, we might see a ripple effect.
There are always ways to go for less. When I moved to New York, I used to go to the opera all the time. And obviously I wasn't paying full price for tickets because they would have student rush tickets or standing room tickets. I went standing room a lot. I loved standing room. It's a cool crew in the standing room department.
Okay.
I realized that everyone's like, why would you stand for 3 hours? I'm like, well, you can do squats. It's good. It's
You know why? It's because you remember it. You know, one of my most memorable nights at the opera was standing room at the Vienna State Opera, and Edita Gruborova was doing one of her last performances, and we wept. The whole night, it was cathartic. It was beautiful. I felt like I was, you know, in the presence of something, you know, transcendent, divine. I was just like, okay, wow. You know, I got to be part of that. And that's the potential here. So, I mean, it's like, and when you walk, oh my God, like you walk into a theater like the Met, and it is just like, you need a second to catch your breath. There is nothing like that. There is nothing like it. I'm sorry. Like, fight me, guys. There's nothing like that. You walk in and you just go like, and it takes your breath away. And I think in a world where everything's immediate, you know, and it's just like, there's just so much noise. I think it's worth it to invest in experiences that take your breath away. And that's certainly one of them, because you feel in a place like that, or a place like Salzburg Festival, or, you know, Scala, I mean, you walk in, and at least for me, and maybe it's different because obviously I'm part of it, but I just feel the weight of those places and the grandeur and the history. And I just think, I got to walk in here tonight. I can't believe this. Right. And it is such, it's life-changing. And I think that's what we're trying to articulate sometimes to people, but it's hard to find the words.
That's definitely the beauty of live theater performances, is that you are there and you are witnessing it and feeling it and all the things. And not everything can be done through video, but being there is very, very special. All the energy being transferred between you and the stage and you and the fellow audience members. There's really nothing like it. Anyway, I want to thank you very much for being here and chatting with me. And I wish you well in your Canadian premiere, I guess, a professional.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, it's very special and very full circle, like I said. And I look forward to also coming and singing operas and all of that, too. But this, I think this was the right thing for my first time in Canada. And thanks for the opportunity just to share a little bit about me and living opera with this, you know, wonderful community of artists.